Welcome to Digitally Creative. I'm your host, Vincent Ferrari, and joining me this week, my longtime friend and longtime friend of the show, the one and only Dean Duplantis. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, Benny. Good to see you, man.
I feel like it's been forever since we talked because, you know, I'm not in the Discord anymore, and it's like, you know, everybody's got their things now. Everybody's working on this and that, and I was literally sitting there going, I've been thinking about this for a while. I'm like, I haven't talked to Dean in a while, so finally I was like, hey, you doing anything Monday night? And you're like, yeah, let's do it.
So I was going through the back catalog over the weekend just to make sure I was up on everything and prepared mm-hmm. for the show. And Apple, you know, podcast player has the last five episodes. And so then mm-hmm. I go to the next episode and you go, yeah, this is a maker. His name's Dean. And he's got all these jewels of knowledge. And I'm like, I wonder who this guy is. He kind of sounds like me. And then I realize it was episode 117. Because this podcast continues, you know, your lineage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I was listening to the last time we had recorded. That was, you know, over a year ago.
Wow.
It was just, I had it saved on my phone. So it popped up.
Oh, that's wild.
Like that. Yeah.
That was just you and I, right? You and
just
I did
and
that
I,
one
yeah.
solo. That was funny because that was one of the nights Ethan was in Rwanda and we mm-hmm. were just chatting it up. And I was like, damn, I was literally thinking about you the other day. I'm like, of all the people I've talked to recently, like, on and off, I used to talk to you so much more, and I feel like we need to catch up with Dean. I feel like that would be a good episode to catch up with. So
I appreciate
the invite. Welcome back.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. You know, it's funny you say that. I've really kind of just not been on social. I haven't been on Discord. I wasn't on Instagram until May for Makers, and I wasn't even going to do that. Mm-hmm. But when I saw the awesome prizes that Luke and Priscilla had put together for that, it's like, you know, come on, I'm a big believer in anytime you commit on an audience to last 30 mm-hmm. days, you know, 30 days of prizes, mm-hmm. I don't believe that most people have the fortitude to remember to go and resubmit their name. And I go, you know, I'm not going to win day one, but by day 20, there's a good chance half the people are not even putting their name in anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And my odds go up. And I won a Total Boat gift set.
Nice.
Called Jerry Hyduke, our friend, because mm-hmm. Jerry won a Lincoln Welding PPE set. And I said, Jerry, I weld. I don't need any more Total Boat. Do you want to swap? And he agreed. And so
Perfect.
We both came out pretty good and rewarded for May for Makers. But that was kind of the only posting I've been doing. And then strangely enough, I've been getting a lot of business requests, like people asking me to do videos for their products. Mm-hmm. And so I did a few of those. I did Indestructible Shoes. I did the safety cutter slice knives. Mm-hmm. And then the last one I got, I said, you know what? This isn't me. I'm not going to, my page isn't big enough for this. I need to stick to who I am. I'm not going to shrill, you know, random nonsense for people.
Isn't that a weird thing? Because, you know, I mean, I know for myself and I imagine for you too, when you start out as a content creator, one of the first things you think is like, wouldn't it be nice if
yeah.
they start approaching you with product? And it's like, once it starts happening, you're like, this isn't as much fun as I thought it was going to be initially.
Yes, the commitment. So I'll say this. A lot of times my posts, I like the Instagram when it was just still photos.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of time on lighting and filtering and editing my photos. I really enjoyed that. But when Instagram got more about video production, I just don't mm-hmm. have the time.
Right.
And I'm by myself a lot of times. So I don't record. I'm making. I need both hands. And they're usually filthy. And so when those brands reached out, some of my funnier videos, because I wanted to plan them out and make a good product. And so for the Indestructible Shoes, if you're a maker, they've probably messaged you if they've messaged me. And basically they tell you, we'll send you a pair of shoes for you to destroy. And if you do a video, we'll send you another pair of shoes.
Nice.
I'm like, well, why not, you know? And so I wrote up a whole script where I'm going to cut the grass. And I ran over the shoes with the lawnmower. I hit the shoes with the chainsaw and the weed eater. And did some damage. And I was really, I mean, they're what they are. They're cheap Chinese shoes, but mm-hmm. they held up okay. And so they sent me my second pair, and that's going to be my yard work pair from now on.
Perfect. Perfect. I mean, that works out, right? That's a good deal. I've had the same thing. You know, it's the one thing that I always said, like, you know, I always have to go after guests. And I've actually talked recently about how difficult it's been to get guests recently, which is why I've had a couple of solo episodes. I even had a rerun episode, which I've never done, but I don't mind doing them now. It's like, I got over that, you know, doing the solo thing, a shorter solo thing maybe, and then having an episode where it's something like a flashback episode if I have to, because I think people understand, like, hey, you know, one man show, it's hard to sometimes get guests. But now, you know, I get more guest pitches than I know what to do with. And, you know, it's like, oh man, if you were just a little more, a little less tangential to what I talk about, I could probably shoehorn you in as a guest. Yeah. But man, I get requests from like author agents, TV show people, and it's like, I'd love to talk to you. And I think one of the things that's going to have to happen at some point, I've talked about this too, is I'm just going to have to go, you know what, you're interesting, let's talk to you. And we'll just figure out how to make a show out of it.
My theory is the people who listen to your podcast, they listen for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why you and Ethan always work so well, because Ethan was kind of like the color and mm-hmm. you were the host.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you listened every week for your friend. The problem is eventually you run out of new things to say.
Right.
And that's a lesson we've taken at our podcast, is we try not to, when the guest says something, we never try to do a comparative analysis. Oh, I did the same thing and I did,
mm-hmm.
because it's not about us. If we talk right. about us 100 episodes in, we've said everything we have to say.
Right.
But I think our listeners, for making our way, I think they like the solo episodes, and we're going to commit to doing once a month, just us. That take, because it is getting harder to find interesting guests.
It really is.
We've tried to push the boundaries a little. We just had Bear Naked, Justin and Ben on. Mm-hmm. We did a Dungeons and Dragons episode, and Christy was like, I don't know how you think this plays into what we're doing. And I said, I don't know anything about it. I think it's interesting. I think a lot of makers play Dungeons and Dragons. Let's have them on. And it was different. Mm-hmm. And I think it only worked because we knew them. If right. we wouldn't have known them, that would have been the most awkward interview.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy to have, you know, you're always trying to figure out how you can push the elasticity of what people expect from your show without ruining the core of what people expect from your show. One right. of the things I love about Making Our Way, and I've said this a lot, there was a couple of weeks ago, you guys and I both had Emmett on from mm-hmm. Dead Rise Woodcraft, and we did entirely different shows with him. And I was like, because, you know, we were talking, he goes, oh, yeah, I'm going to be on with Dean, Christy, and Austin. And I'm like, okay, no problem. We'll still do it. Because I knew. I don't even have to think about it. I'm like, nah, it's not going to be the same show. It's going to be fine. And, you know, it was totally different. We had a completely different conversation. We talked about all kinds of different things. And one of the things I love about your show is you guys have truly found your niche in being more project-focused than people-focused. It's like, we've taken the opposite approach. I love to talk to people. I'll talk about your childhood for an entire episode. Whereas you guys, what did you do last week? What did you do last month?
Yeah,
what
do
you
make? Tell them in the beginning, we're not going to, I don't care about your high school prom. I don't want to know about the trauma that got you into woodworking. That's not what we're here to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather you go on for 10 minutes about how a hinge works than hear some interesting story about your grandfather. And it's counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it is we've leaned into who we are.
Right.
You are an excellent conversationalist. And I was hoping at some point in here, maybe you and I could talk about the art of conversation and questioning and interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I bring to our podcast, is I keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to talk, and I have to really, I've worked on not talking so much. Austin is very technically sound.
Mm-hmm.
Christy is our personal person. Like, she's the one getting the guest. She's the one that's very comforting. So we've leaned into who we are. Like, look, we're not Joe Rogan. We're not going to have the best conversations because we're very different people.
Mm-hmm.
But if we stay in this little ball and don't leave this ball, we're going to be okay.
And so then, embracing who you are is actually what makes the podcast work. It's kind of, so usually everybody's trying to break out. Like, I want to be different. No, don't be different. Do what you're good at. It's okay.
Do what you're good at.
Yeah. I love it.
If we had to make Austin interview people every week, he'd have a heart attack. You know, he wants to ask them about the tools they use, where they source mm-hmm. the material. And that's, I think it's a great lane for us. And like I said, you know, we're at, I don't know where we're at, 120, something like that. I'm not a numbers guy. Christy looks at all the numbers. She tracks all that stuff. She sets up all the guests. She does all that stuff. I like the editing, and I like meeting new people. So mm-hmm. I always push, like, I want, for every Duresta, I want somebody with 500 followers.
Right.
And we've negotiated on that, and I think it's been pretty equal. We've interviewed folks that make armor for mice, which actually was a pretty big account. We interviewed some people in Arkansas who make felt hats, and a girl in Georgia that makes clay earrings. And that's the other thing, too. I know you're in the Northeast, and y'all kind of have your clan. A lot of Northeast makers, and y'all know each other, and you stick – I'm in Texas, in Houston, and we have a group down here, but the podcast has introduced me to people all over the place, and that's been really awesome.
I remember one episode in particular. I think it was the one you guys had the guy that made flies on the show.
Yeah.
And I remember I saw the guest and I looked at the guest and I looked at the description. I'm like, oh, I have no interest in this whatsoever. Yeah. And I remember listening to the episode. I was driving somewhere and I caught the whole episode in the car. I was probably coming home from Al's because I caught the whole episode in the car. And I'm listening to this and I'm like, this is the most interesting goddamn thing I've ever heard. This makes no sense. Why am I interested in this? And I'm enjoying the episode. And I actually grabbed the three of you into a group chat. And I'm like, I have no idea how you did it, but you made me interested in a fly maker. Like, who cares? But you guys made it so much fun to listen to that I just enjoyed the hell out of it.
None of us know anything about fly fishing. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. You know, we've actually had a hiccups in, we tell our guests, we're going to ask you questions that are probably below the level of conversation you're used to having. Mm-hmm. The reason is because it's for our audience.
Right.
We believe that our audience doesn't make flies. We believe our audience doesn't do jewelry casting. So we are going to ask questions that we think they might know. Don't think we're patronizing or we're picking on you or anything like that, because we have had some people like, what is going on? Why are you asking me these basic things?
Mm.
And it's because, again, we have our formula, and our formula is, if we allow it to just stay where you're comfortable, then the conversation's over in 10 minutes.
Yeah, so you're also going to go over a lot of people's head, you know.
Right.
You know, you're talking to people that are so specialized in such niche skills. Like, not everybody. Yeah, I like the way you describe that. Not everybody knows how to cast something. Not everybody understands all these intricate processes to your niche thing that you do. So yeah, you're going to have to dumb it down for some of us.
30 minutes with a guy who makes flies turns into a fishing story real quick, and then you've got 15 minutes on the best fish he caught, and that's it. It's over. Mm-hmm. But to pull him back down, like, no, tell me about the string that you use, and what's the technique on that, and where do you get your natural fibers? Do you have a dog that you... And so here's a fun factoid on that. Unbeknownst to us, we schedule that guy, Slab City Flies, the week after our friend Scott Jabor, all right? They're brother-in-laws. We had no idea. No idea they were related.
Now,
we
that's random.
Back-to-back weeks. Scott, we've been telling him for 2 years, he was making a motorcycle rocking horse for his son. And I said, you finish that, we'll have you on. Until you finish that, you're not coming on our podcast. And so he finally finished it. We got him on the podcast. And when we're saying goodbye, he said, tell my brother-in-law hello next week. And we go, what? He's like, yeah, Slab City. He married my sister. Or no, they married sisters. That's what it was. They married sisters.
That's so wild.
And I was like, how does this even happen in this universe?
That is crazy.
It was pretty neat. It's neat how sometimes those things run together.
Oh yeah. The small world of people who know other people. I got Kathy sent me something the other day. It was from, I forgot what it was off the top of my head. I forget what the top of it was. But she sent me something, and it was from an Instagram account that I knew the person. And I was like, oh yeah, I actually know that person. She's like, oh yeah, this just popped up in my feed. She goes, and of course you knew him. Of course, he's a woodworker. It's like, it was so funny to see, you know, when somebody outside of what we consider our circle, when somebody hits mainstream appeal and you start seeing stuff going around. Beth sent me last summer when Andrew Hatch did the bandsaw blade video, where he threw the bandsaw blade and then ducked behind his toolbox to let it expand. Beth sent me that and she goes, this looks like you. And I'm like, yeah, I know that guy.
It's so funny. And then too, anytime you interact with people in normal society, and I'm all excited, like, oh, we're interviewing so-and-so, and it's a big name. It's a Netflix name. It's, you know, these are huge accounts, and they just look at me with glass eyes. They have no, because outside of our little world,
right,
it takes on a different persona.
I actually just met one of Kathy's friends for dinner Saturday, and she heard about the podcast. She goes, so who do you talk to on the podcast? Now, the answer, of course, is I talk to makers, artists, creatives, and that's what I said. I said, but if I'm telling someone who's not a maker, an artist, or creative who I talk to, who do I tell? I was like, oh, we had the guy that invented the Bop-It. We had,
episode.
Thank you. We had one of the guys from Is It Cake. We've had Jimmy DiResta from Netflix. I have to call him Jimmy DiResta from the Netflix
show,
Making Fun. Because they don't know who the hell Jimmy DiResta is. They, you know, we obviously do, but it's just really funny. Like, to have to describe, I have to think of the most mainstream guests that we've had on the show over the years. It's like, oh yeah, that's the kind of guests that we have, so that people understand.
My shtick is always, you don't have to listen because we're not making it for you. And I'm like the most anti-fame person ever. Yeah. Oh, you have a podcast? What's it about? I said, you don't want to listen to it. It's not for you. It's for creative people.
I also like how I love how you guys have, you know, that one you did one episode where you break down how you do your show.
Sure.
And I really enjoyed that because it's kind of interesting to hear your approach to your show. This show, obviously, is just one long conversation start to finish until around the end, and we start doing like housekeeping type stuff. But you guys have an actual format for your show.
Yes.
And you stick to it. Like every episode, you rigidly stick to it. Is that structure there to contain you guys, or is that structure just there because it kind of evolved that way?
No. It's by design. So I always tell Christy, everything's with intention. Mm-hmm. You know, LSU is playing right now, but I would have worn the shirt regardless if they were playing, because you like Alabama. Mm-hmm. And I have to, you know, remind you who won last year's football game. But everything's with intention. And so what happens when you have a podcast with multiple people on it? Mm-hmm. You have different levels of ability and skill. Everyone brings something different to the table.
Right.
So in my opinion, to build a strong foundation, you need a team. And a team is all willing to work together towards a common goal. If you don't have that team mentality, you'll get a diva, or you'll get someone who feels left out and discounted. And that eventually will lead to the eroding of your situation. Mm-hmm. And we've had some times where any one of the three of us are like, I'm over this. It's too much work. Can't do it anymore. And some of that was I was doing the editing, and I was doing it. I wasn't doing a very good job on my end of tracking edits. And so I was investing hours on the weekend to edit this podcast. And I'm like, this isn't fair. I'm putting in too much work. What are y'all doing? Mm-hmm. And so we kind of came together, and almost like a married couple would, we split up the chores. You know, Christy books the guests. Christy makes all the social media posts. Christy reaches out and arranges everything. Austin has the most technical skill. He brings something the rest of us don't have. He'll load the podcast tonight. He'll type up all the descriptions. You know, he has his deal. But in all that, we have a commitment that don't come to the recording unprepared. Mm-hmm. All three of us. And if you don't have it today, you just need to speak up and someone else will pick up your slack.
Right.
But the whole driving force behind, we're very organized. We are probably more organized than we are professional.
I like that.
You know, yeah, we'll never be making it or any of those. And that's mm-hmm. fine. We're okay with that. We're doing what we're doing and we're happy with how it's working for us. But in that, we have a structure, and the structure keeps us on track, keeps us all in our places and a consistent product coming out.
It's worked for you really well, and you've had some really good guests over the last couple of years, and you've kept it going. You know, everybody we know started a podcast at one point or another, and it's always like, oh, that's good, you're starting a podcast. Come back to me when you're 20 episodes in and you're sure you're going to keep doing this, because usually when usually that's around the time you start developing those, I'm doing too much of this. This isn't working. I'm burnt out on this. Like, hell, I've had those moments the last couple of weeks with this show myself, you know, where I'm like, oh, why am I doing this? Like, it's a small audience, or at least it's hard to describe. And I don't know, maybe you guys, if you're not, you said you're not.
I bet your audience is bigger than our audience.
I'd be willing to bet it's probably about the same size. If you,
sure.
You know, we
same
could,
12
we,
people.
Yeah, pretty much. We could compare numbers afterwards. But I think what's happening, and I, you know, I've seen this with this show. I was wondering if you've seen it with yours. I was talking about this, and this show, the initial pop is not what it was. Like,
sure.
The initial drop on drop day, we used to get a certain number of listeners. That number is about 40% lower initially. Eventually, it gets up to that number, though. Eventually, the numbers are the same. Like, if you look at the older episodes of Digitally Creative versus the last few episodes of Because We Make, they're about the same. It's just, it takes longer to get there. And I'm wondering if I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I'm thinking people just don't pounce on episodes the way they used to.
It's like any other fad, or, you know, people are just consuming things. And there was a time when everyone was working from home, or everyone was looking for home-based hobbies. A lot of people got into making, a lot of people got into being creative. and they were consuming this kind of content because they were living that lifestyle.
Right.
And then eventually they moved on and they started playing golf, or they had kids and kids have Little League, or they're not in the car as much as they used to be. Because I had a span where I was only consuming comedy podcasts because I just needed something that wasn't what I lived. And then I was like, you know what? I need to get back to my friends, support them, hear what they're doing, because I'm not as active on Discord now that I'm in a different office situation.
Right.
And so I moved back and forth, but I don't have enough time. I can't listen to, so I obviously don't listen to my own podcast because I live it. And then I've got, you know, this, I think Dave Bauer puts out a good product, and then you've got Clamp. And so I listen to those, and there's some guys in Houston that have podcasts I try to listen to. And then you listen to those four, and that's my commute.
That's a lot. And that's, by the way, that's a lot of content. You know, it's, it's just the people that you and I know that are doing podcasts. That's a week's worth of podcasts, like, easily.
One thing I've been thinking about lately is, you know, how many times can I listen to, you know, Aha's Take on Me when I could spend that 3 minutes listening to a podcast or watching somebody's YouTube video? You know, where am I committing? Am I watching the same Star Wars movie again and again, when I could have put YouTube on and watched, you know, Morley's new video or whomever. So I have thought about that some too. I do feel like my content consuming has shifted back into more comfortable, mindless modes and less attentive modes.
That's interesting, because I've literally gone the opposite direction. That's so funny. See, this is why I love having, this is why I love talking to people about this, because I've found myself, like, you know, you used the word intentional before, and I that's how I've been with my content consumption. It's like, I go to a podcast feed, unless I know you. If I know you, I'm probably listening to all the episodes of your show, unless I'm just really not interested in a guest. And then I have to really love you to listen to your episode. But I don't listen to every episode of every podcast I listen to anymore. Like, I'll see the episode come up, I'll see the guest and go, not today. And I'll wait till I'll get another one next week. It'll be fine. One of my favorite examples of that, like, I always talk about Joe Rogan, because I think Joe Rogan is the best interviewer on the planet. And I love going to his list of guests and going, oh, nothing this week. All right. Next week we'll queue up a few and listen
to
it.
Just save 3 hours. All right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, there's very few that I'll go, I don't care who they're talking to, I'm going to listen to it and just figure it out. You know, the people that have a proven track record of talking about things that I may or may not be interested in, that I'll listen and go, yep, that was way more interesting than I would have given it credit for being. Those are the people I listen to everything for. But, like, someone like Joe Rogan, when he's got, you know, X, you know, if I see blank, blank, blank is a stand-up comedian, if I don't know who you are, I'm probably not going to listen to it. Even if you're the funniest guy in the world. It's not I'm not even trying to, like, say you're not funny. I'm just saying I got to know who you are if I'm going to listen to a stand-up comedian talk to Joe Rogan for 2 hours.
You know what's interesting? We were talking before about where we are in life, and I'm wondering if that plays into it as well. That, you know, I'm at we'll call it an 8-to-5. It's kind of like a 6-to-4 that is very on all the time. So on that I can't even listen to podcasts at work because I have to multitask with what I'm doing. And so when I leave, I don't know that I want to listen with intention. And that's when I put on Aha and try to hit that falsetto, and I still can't get it. And I'm wondering if that's what it is that I'm just moving to that passive media so I can check out for a little while. And, you know, maybe I need to put on, you know, Clamp's easy to ignore. Maybe I'll start with that one as a passive listen and see if I can work some of those back in. But I do wonder if work life balance, if work's pulling a little too much of my brain power.
I've had those moments too. Like, I used to, so my weekends used to be big podcast listen time for me. Like, I'd be doing stuff around the house or doing stuff in the shop, but now I have Kathy, and my weekends are not in the shop as much. My weekends are with her, and I'm not going to sit there and listen to podcasts while I'm hanging out with my girlfriend. Like, it's just not going to happen. It's, you know, she wouldn't mind. She would encourage it, but I save that for when she's at work or when she's here and she's working and I'm doing things, or when I go to the shop, I put podcasts on, or if I'm in my craft room, I put podcasts on. So, and my
I was gonna say, my wife's a big runner, and that's my, like, Dean time. You know, she's gonna go for her runs, then I just come out here. My shop's separate from the house, so it was like a detached garage, and so I just come out here, I put the TV on, put some music on, and sand something or sweep something. And I just, yeah, this is my Dean time away from her. Otherwise, yeah, she wants me just sitting in there. It doesn't matter if I'm talking to her. She just wants me sitting
with her.
In there.
Just be with her. Yeah. Yeah. It's be present for the moment. She listens, Kathy listens to, obviously, if you listen to the episode with her on it, she listens to a ton of music. Her music consumption, I didn't realize how much I knew about music till I met her. And it's like, I'm constantly on my toes because it's like, you better know your artists, your songs, your years, like who sang with who, when they were popular. If you went to a concert, tell me all about it. Like, she's obsessed with music, and it's gotten me kind of like, oh, I got to keep my music game sharp. So now I'm listening to more music too, because it's like, I don't want to be a music idiot. I want to make sure that I can have a conversation with her. You know, she was fascinated when we first met that I could talk to her about New Kids on the Block, because not a whole lot of guys can talk about New Kids on the Block. But my sister,
is that what her radio station is?
Her radio station, they formed as a kind of like a New Kids on the Block kind of thing. That's right. But they do everything. And they're actually, it's very interesting you mentioned that, because that's, you know, we talked about brand and what people expect. They're having an issue where it's like people expect them to only be New Kids on the Block. Meanwhile, there is New Kids on the Block stuff, like even the newer solo stuff that people outside of that community don't even know exists. They play a lot of other music on that channel. I mean, her and I did a show about a month ago. There was one song that wasn't even a New Kids song. It was a solo song from one of the members of the band, you know, but they're having that same thing where people have gotten there. It's either the people that love New Kids go to them, or the people that don't love New Kids go, that's just that. And they don't go there. And it's that weird crossroads you hit. Like, how much do you want to shed your brand and kind of rebrand what you do, or point out the fact that you're not the thing that everyone's coming to you for? How much do you want to niche down versus how much do you want to just do what you're good at? You know?
Yeah. I had something like that with the stamps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd gotten kind of known for making stamps for people, logo stamps for people.
Yep.
And it was fun. And I really enjoyed it. And it definitely kept me busy in 2020. And I've met a lot of new people, got to be part of their process. And it was always rewarding to see people use the stamps in their videos or on their postings. But it got to a point where it was like, okay, I am very much a generalist.
Mm-hmm.
I am not. Maybe I've become a stamp expert, but this is not what I'm going to be. And I went out of my way to just stop posting. I don't post stamps anymore, not because I'm not making them. I got an order today, but just because I was like, I can't become just this. I've got to be more than this. And now I kind of sit here. You had Keith on a few weeks ago. They were talking about Maker Camp, his swap that he does. And I'm like, what am I going to make? And Keith goes, yo, just show off your skills. I'm like, well, I don't know what my skills are. You know, do I just make stamps again? I can't make them a custom pair of tennis shoes.
Right.
You know, what am I going to do for these people? I can't make anything heavy that I've got to, you know, mail up there. So
just so you know, by the way, this is because of you. The reason I have this stamp, that I ever made this stamp, was because of you. Because you made the process look so just easy. And I had been struggling with it forever. And it was like, you gave me, for those of you that aren't in my Instagram DMs, Dean actually recorded his whole process. And it kind of gave me the confidence on how to tackle it with the Glowforge. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can make these now. I can totally make these.
I was always willing to share the process because, again, it wasn't ever about the stamps for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was about meeting new people, helping them out. I actually, something in your wheelhouse, I like the packaging. Like, okay, where's my boxes? How am I going to label them? What's the best way to ship them? You know, how am I taping them? What's my flow, your order of operations from dropping the file in the Glowforge to cutting the wood to getting the corners all prepped? I kind of just enjoyed the whole process of that project. It was easy. I could do it in an hour or two and had something I had accomplished. And I think I enjoyed that more than anything.
I feel the same way, by the way. And the more cutting boards I've made over the years, obviously you get faster at doing things in general. You can only speed things up as much as the finish or the glue will allow you to.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I can finish a cutting board in a day now. If I time everything right, I can get a cutting board done in a day, which used to be a week process. Now it's like a one-day process for me. And it's like, it's not hard anymore. And I was watching a video from Father's Day, because Father's Day in 2018 was the first time I ever made a cutting board. And was it 2018? Yeah, it was 2018. It was the first time I ever made a cutting board. And I'm looking at the video of the cutting board, and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't round over the edges. I didn't round the corners. I used the worst feet conceivable for it. I probably drilled the holes without a marker of some kind. You know, it's, I'm looking at it, and it's a beautiful board. Like, I'm not even taking away from it, but I'm like, I have learned so much in five years of making them. You know, it's now a process. Like, I don't forget to put anything in the box, because putting the stuff in the box is part of the process. You know, putting the bomb in, putting the instructions in. That's just, I grab, even as I'm leaving my shop, I grab a box, I grab a can of bomb, and I come home and I immediately put the envelope with the instructions with the whole thing. And it's just, it's like automatic now. I don't even think about it anymore. And that was something I had to think about at every board. Now it's like, I don't even remember if I did it, because it's so automatic.
I feel so bad for folks who get hung up on, you know, I've talked about this on our podcast a lot. They judge themselves off their first try.
Mm-hmm.
And they get hung up on the quality of their work versus someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't just see that it's not going to be 5 years. It's going to be 18 months. Right. If you work on something 18 months, by the fifth time you do it, the quality jump is unbelievable, because you've learned from your mistakes.
Sure.
And I feel so bad for people who make one thing and then they go, oh, well, this just isn't good enough. I need to do something else. It's like, well, that was your first one, you know?
Right.
And your second one's not going to be much better, but it'll be better. But by the time you make the fifth one, now you've got something.
And that's when you start, it takes a few attempts before you start developing the kind of style of something where people recognize it as your work. Like, if you start making the same thing over and over again, the first few times you're really just trying it. You're trying to figure out what you're trying to do. And then the more you make, the more they go, oh, that's one of his. Like, I recognize the board. I recognize the style. I recognize the way he does his stuff. And that's so rewarding. Like, that's what you're shooting for. But you don't get there right away. You get there after you do a few different things and you go, I don't like that much. Or I experimented with that. I didn't love it. You know, chamfering edges, for example. I used to try to decide, do I like chamfers better? Do I like roundovers better? And I agonized over this. And it was just like, I'm just going to make whatever the wood tells me to make. But then I started realizing, like, chamfers are not what I do. Like, they don't look like my boards. They look like boards. They look good, but it's not the style of board I make. So now I make tiny little chamfers. Not these big chonky I don't want them to look like pillows anymore. I just want them to knock the edge off of them. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's a much more refined look. I'm a lot happier with the way these look now. But I didn't know that until I made a few other ways.
So. Something I've really enjoyed over the last 3 years is watching people. I feel like the community got, at least in my experience, got closer in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to know some people more personably. And then to see their skills or their projects, how much they've advanced over the 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think about, like, Nick Birchtold. Like, I remember the first time I saw one of his mallets, and they were unbelievable. They were unbelievable. But he's gone even further just in a year, 18 months, from this one cushioned style that he had to, you know, dragon scales and all kind of different intricate inlays and different materials. You know, he did a metal handle the other day for somebody. And so just to see him, you know, Morley's one that's really obvious to see what he's done over the last, Austin's dad, Paul Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has more followers than Austin does now on almost every platform.
Which is pretty funny.
But just to see somebody go from what they were comfortable doing and just push themselves and put themselves out there and get better and better and better. That's a very enjoyable part of this community for me.
It's happening at an alarming rate too. Like the rate of advancement in our community in general, people trying new things and then going from, I'm going to try this to see how it works, to a few months later, like, that's what they're doing now. Like, they do that now.
We have guys in our Houston group that were just hobbyists and, you know, made plywood furniture, Facebook marketplace type stuff. And in 2 years, they're full-time contractors. They're building, you know, professional built-ins, or they're, you know, making really nice high-end stuff for people. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, it went from like this little hobbyist maker kind of community to these guys are professionals now. You know, this is what they do. They drive pickup trucks and make big wood orders and build stuff in people's houses. It's crazy to see the growth.
We can take it back to you just recently made a pair of shoes. And it's like, you don't... I didn't know all that was in... I mean, I knew obviously it's a process, right? I didn't know any part of the process, but I'm listening to you. It was about 2 weeks ago when you were talking about all the things you learned making your first pair. And yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ, like that would kill me. But then I thought about it. I'm like, but that's what it is to try something new. That's you literally epitomized what it is to learn a new process to sit there and like, okay, I got to have this thing and it stitches this way. And oh, the soles are made this way. And all the stuff that you ended up learning from that. And, you know, would you make another pair? And I know you would. Like, and it's kind of cool. Like, oh yeah, he's still interested in making like the perfect pair.
Because right. The first pair, from 15 feet away, they look great. But, you know, I'm not letting anybody get up close to them. So let me tell you some about those. There were some interesting parts to that decision.
Mm-hmm.
It all goes back into we're all at home. I don't know about all the listeners, but I start collecting hobbies. So first I spent a gajillion dollars on Legos and, you know, I'm getting Legos delivered to the house once a week. And then one day I looked and was like, that's just too much money in Legos. So then I started doing the bourbon. So I'm driving to every liquor store for 100 miles, trying to find, you know, bourbon. And I did that for a little while. And then I started doing Nikes. And I never really was a Jordan guy. I like Air Maxes or more running shoes, but I start buying Jordans. And so I get to the point where the ones I want, I can't get because the bots or whatever are buying them. Mm-hmm. And the ones I can get, I don't really want. And so I said, you know what? I'm just going to make the ones I want. And I go, how can I do that? So there were three things I had to figure out. One was what materials were needed. That was actually harder to figure out than you would have expected. Because the people who teach classes on this, they don't share all the background information on the interior padding and you know, how the lasting works and all the different toe puffs and heel pieces, because they want you to go to them and pay for the courses. The other thing was, okay, so I've got to figure out the material. Then I've got to figure out how am I going to put these things together? Because all I have is a Singer. I've got an HD Singer, the gray one, but come on, it's just a plastic sewing machine. It's not going to sew.
That's not a leather sewing machine, right?
Right. You could sew two pieces together, maybe, but not everything I needed to sew. And so I said two things or three things, but we'll just stick with those two. In my neighborhood, there is a guy who has a leather goods store. So they sell leather bags, wallets. That's what they do. And I just stopped in one day and kind of checked him out. And I talked to him for a little while and I was just supportive, like, hey, I'll buy something and I hope you guys are doing well and I want to see y'all succeed or whatever. And then I went back another time and I was talking to him again and I just built a relationship with him. And so finally, after a little while, I just said, look, this is kind of out there, but would you be willing to sell me time on one of your leather sewing machines? Mm-hmm. You know, you can watch over my shoulder, make sure I'm not breaking it. I'll pay for it if I break it, but I just need access to this tool and it's either go buy one for $2,000 or borrow yours. And so he said, sure. And what ended up happening was he needed brass embossing brands to do hot foil. And I said, well, I have a fiber laser. So exactly. I'll trade you brands. I'll fiber laser brands for you if you let me come get on your sewing machine. And it was awesome. So I got to use a real machine and I had someone to help me. I got to use his, and actually the material, I just went through his scrap bin.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't sit there and like, okay, this is red and this is blue. I just went through what scrap pieces does he have big enough to make shoes out of. And I have some alligator on there in a place or two and some real nice leather that was probably for bags or something. But that was an awesome project. It really consumed me for a while, most of the winter. And I'm glad I did it. And I'll probably do another one here this fall.
I love the idea of, I had the same thing with Al, very similar idea.
Sure.
I had a he was working on refinishing a big ass table. And when I say big ass table, I'm not even joking. It's probably about 12 to 14 feet long by about 6 feet wide. It's solid, like 2, you know, 8-quarter oak. And
oh,
it's
wow.
got Yeah, not even joking. And I wish I was kidding about how big and heavy this thing was. It's a beast. Like, the legs are so heavy, you can really only lift two legs at a time. Like, it's a monster. And I helped him strip all the finish off it and get it ready for, which he's actually prepping it now for stain for the customer. And, you know, at one point Al goes, you know, don't forget to track your hours. I was like, I'm not tracking my hours on this one, buddy. And he's like, why? I was like, one day I'm going to need access to machine time. I have no problem trading labor for machine time in this case. Yeah. Like, the next project that I help you with, we'll worry about getting paid. But for this one, let's just say this is me just trading labor for machine time. And, you know, I mean, that man's just been a godsend to me, because I have needed his help way more than I like to admit, in the especially with the last cutting board I finished, which I did finish, and it is beautiful. But it's well beyond the capabilities of my shop. It's probably beyond my capabilities to have even said I could do one. But, you know, the fact that I had Al as a backup, it's like, oh, no, I got this covered, and all I have to do is, yeah, I got to do, like, some menial grunt work and sand some shit. I can make that happen. You know, it's like, it's a pretty good trade-off for me. I'm perfectly happy to do that with him.
You know, when I started making stamps, I really struggled with pricing. Mm-hmm. And so what I would do is I'd go look at the person's page, and if they made any kind of good, mm-hmm. I would always say, would you do a trade? And so, you know, I'll trade, you know, one of your shirts for a stamp, or mm-hmm. One of your wallets or leather goods, even if I had no use for it, but to get my hands on something that someone else in the community made. I'm definitely a collector or hoarder. I love doing the barter and the trading. Jeff Stein says that my whole Christmas ornament thing was just a ruse to get.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I was just going to say that. That was one of the, I got to admit, that was one of the funnest things ever was, and, you know, it was the same thing with Emmett's Treescape fundraiser and the chess piece fundraiser. Yeah, we have to talk about all that stuff, because what I love about all these projects, and especially working on it with generally the same people for the most part, you know, a certain group of people that have done all three of those, and there's certain people that, you know, come and go, but there's a core group of people that are always doing these things. Like, you know, if Emmett's doing something, I'm sure he knows who he can ask and get a definite yes from versus who he's going to get a hopeful yes from. And man, it's so fun watching people interpret a thing in such different ways. You know, Emmett's Treescape project has blown my mind with just, oh, this is the tree I wanted to make. This is the tree he wanted to make. This is the tree she wanted to make. And none of them are the same. There isn't a single duplicate, and he's gotten, what, 36, 38-ish of them now?
Yeah, not a single material's the same, nothing.
Not even process, right? People aren't even using the same processes. It's like, that's insane. How do you get that many and no duplicates? Like, it's just that we're all just different people.
It's funny, you left the Discord, but I'm pretty much a bully. Anytime someone does anything in the Discord, mm-hmm. I'm like, you all need to get off your butts and mm-hmm. support your friend. Mm-hmm. Yo, you have no excuses. Don't give me, I'm busy. It's a tree. Walk outside, break a branch off a tree, put it in a box, mail it to Emmett.
Yeah.
Let's do this. And I do wonder, you know, there's so many people that just more people listen to our podcast than participated in Emmett's giveaway.
Sure.
And we've both talked about him. And I wonder if maybe just some people aren't sure of their abilities, or they're nervous to participate. And I'd say, man, there is nothing that gets you more engaged in the community than doing an instructable or doing a competition or doing, you don't have to win everything. You don't mm-hmm. have to win anything.
Right.
You know, first place, there's no first place in Emmett's raffle. It's about supporting him in making something that drives money to this charity.
Yeah.
It's nobody's going to win best tree in show. I mean,
I'm always about, and I always tell people this, and you know, if anyone's doing a charity and they need me to make something for a charity, for something like those three projects are good examples, I'm all for it. Like, I will, you know, depending on the time, I will find a way to fit it in. Like this, the tree I made for Emmett's thing, it took me days of design, like trying to figure out how to make that work. Like, cause I knew what I wanted to do, what
did
I wanted
do it on
to
the Glowforge?
Do. I did do it on the Glowforge. It's three pieces of MDF. It's three pieces of MDF cut in the same shape and then laminated together and then drilled for the stem at the bottom and hand painted, because I always talk about it. Hand painting is my big weakness, and I have been really working hard to get better at hand painting stuff. And it made me so happy when I was done with this, because Kathy was here for the whole process. She got to see it go from a blank piece of MDF to the tree, to the painted version, to the finished version in the course of a weekend.
Yeah.
And it was like, she's like, I don't know how you do what you do sometimes. it's so kind of fun.
I had this saying that if you say the F-bomb, there's two situations going on. One is either you've discovered an opportunity to provide a service that doesn't currently exist, mm-hmm. or you need to take a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so set. I'm making all these damn brass branding irons for this guy. So I have brass shavings everywhere. And I was like, I'm doing brass and epoxy, and I'm going to do something with this to make my tree trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And it shattered every time I tried to turn it on the lathe. I think I shattered three of them.
Oh my
and
God.
I was like, right before I was about to quit, what I ended up doing was just taking two of the bigger broken pieces, recasting it with epoxy, and mm-hmm. barely turning it to get it kind of, I think there's even a flat spot in the tree, and that's just because I didn't want to turn it any smaller.
Right.
I was like, this is good enough. It's roundish. It's trees aren't perfectly round. It just needs to be roundish.
It's round adjacent.
Yeah. But, you know, that was one, the big one on that one, and I know you're a big Procreate guy, so I'm in that Adobe situation, and I made a palm tree. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to pay for a file when I can just make my own files.
Sure.
And so I downloaded a just black and white palm tree, you know, overhead view, mm-hmm. traced one leaf, and then used the duplicate function around a circle. And I did mm-hmm. a 3-leaf, 4-leaf, and a 5-leaf, and then put the piece of brass. I'd never cut brass on the fiber laser. Put a piece of brass on the fiber laser, cut them out. It's like, oh, this is wild how well this is working. And the tree came out great. And I was so happy. I turned epoxy and brass on the lathe, cut brass on my fiber laser, and then I patinaed it with some ammonia in like a little mini gas chamber. And in the end, I was so excited with how quick it came out and how well on three things I don't do. I don't patina brass all the time. And I'm not in the jewelry world, but I'm glad if Emmett wouldn't have done the competition and if I wouldn't have committed to supporting him, I wouldn't have had that experience.
I have always wanted to, and it sounds like such a silly, like low level thing, but I've always wanted to look at something in a video game and make it an object.
Yeah.
And not get help. Like, cause I'm not going to lie. I have a tendency to get 20 minutes into something and go, there's got to be somebody that's already done this, and then go find the file and grab a file. And I was obsessed with not doing that with this tree. So I went to, I grabbed a screenshot of the game and I blew it up super huge. And I sat there in Illustrator and did circles and rectangles and overlapped everything and cut away extra until it looked right, until I had the outline of the shape. And then I was like, well, then how the hell are you going to get all the detail on? You just engrave it? I'm like, no, I'm going to hand paint this. And that's what I did. I took my Posca markers, and I used paint markers to paint the whole thing. And when I was done, except the only thing I hand painted with a paintbrush were the black lines around the tree trunk. And I was so happy with it. And I never would have even attempted this had he not done that challenge. Like, it just wasn't a thing for me. It wasn't something that was on my radar. It wasn't like doing this didn't matter. It wasn't important at the time. So I wouldn't have done it, but he made it matter. I was like, well, this is an opportunity to try something cool, do something interesting, try a few new things and see how they work. And now I'm all about it.
I hate painting. I'm so bad at painting. I think that's one reason why I like nice wood, because I don't want to have to paint it or stain mm-hmm. it or mess with it. And I just had a lady ask me to shorten a belt for her. Mm-hmm. And so I go, yeah, no problem. I'll take the buckle off. We'll cut it. I'll sew the buckle back on. And she said, no, that's not what I want. I want to cut the tail, that the distance between the last hole and the end of the belt is too long and it's floppy. I don't like it. I want the tail cut back. The problem was it had this three bevel end. It wasn't like a point or a curve. It had this three bevel end. And there was a black line, a thin black line that went right on the edge all the way around this belt. So when I cut it, now it's raw leather. Oh, I've got to duplicate this thin black line. and I tried three times with a paintbrush, and I just don't have that touch to keep the consistent pressure and understand how your hand should move. So what I ended up doing, I just took a Sharpie and just went real light around the edge and duplicated this line. And I'm like, she'll never know, you know. And if she does know, then she can paint it herself.
She'll be happy because it looks right. That's all that matters. Right. Sometimes I think that's
to grab a Sharpie.
I think that's like something that we kind of all need to remind ourselves from time to time. It's often more about it looking right than, quote, being right.
Right.
Like, I mean, I understand the importance of doing things the right way, so to speak. But in a situation like that, like, that's just not the thing to spend effort on. Like, that's a high effort, low return situation.
Yeah, we all think Ron Swanson's going to walk through the door and judge everything that we're putting together. And the reality is, most of the people that we're making stuff for, especially if they're commissioning us, mm-hmm. they don't have the background to judge what you're doing.
If they did, they'd be making it.
Right. If they had that level of understanding, they'd be making it. Right. And I'm not saying that there's not someone out there that's just a jerk, but the majority of the time, I'll make things and have known blemishes. I lean into the blemishes. We were talking mm-hmm. about ashtrays on the CNC earlier. Mm-hmm. If I get some tear out, I'll take a file and match that tear out on all of them, make it a decorative feature, and people love it. They're like, oh, I love the little accent that you have here.
It looks so organic.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, trust me. That's exactly what it is. It was made like that on purpose.
It's an organic error. That's what it was. And I think we shy away from it too much in general. You know, it's very funny. I'm working on an art project. I don't do a lot of art projects. You know, you can tell when I'm wanting to just have fun with something when it's an art project for me. And I started working on this. I'm making a checkerboard. Mm-hmm. And the checkers are going to be Oreos.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to Home Depot and I tell the guy at Home Depot, I'm like, I've got the strangest request you're going to be asked today, but I'm pretty sure you can help me out. And I put Oreo cookies in a Ziploc bag, the golden ones and the regular ones on the counter. I said, I need to color match these. And he just kind of laughed. He goes, well, that is the strangest thing I've been asked today. So you win. So we talked about it for a little bit. He goes, okay, there's two ways we can go. Cause I handed him two paint chips that I had found. He goes, well, we could put this under the thing and scan it. He goes, however you want to proceed. He goes, if you want, we'll figure out a way to get the best color match. And I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. So I'm looking at the colors I picked. I'm like, if I use these colors right now, this would be fine. But I was such a perfectionist. I was like, I really want these to look like perfect Oreos. He scans the Oreo. He opens up the paint jar. And for those of you that don't know, when you use like house interior paint, it tends to be lighter in the can than it is on the finished product. So he opens it up and we start and I look and I'm a little bit disappointed. And I'm like, damn it, this is not what I'm going for. But I'll just go with it. Screw it. Because no one's going to look at it and go, that's not an Oreo. It's not dark enough. I came home on Friday while Kathy was working. I went into my craft room and I took the two paint samples and I painted the golden Oreo and I painted the brown Oreo and I let it dry. And I literally walked in there at one point after it had dried. I went, holy shit, no way. And she goes, what? And I brought them out. I said, look at these. And she goes, oh, wow. And it turns out that, yeah, just believing that it would work ended up working. If I had been my normal self, I would have been so picky. We're like, nah, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. It ended up working perfectly. They look amazing. Yeah. I can't wait to do the rest of them now.
Oh, that's cool. What are you doing for the board?
So the board I'm going to do, I have a plan for the board. The board is going to be white and blue squares to match the Oreo packaging. Okay. And then I am remaking the Oreo logo, and I'm going to call the game Check Oreos.
Check Oreos.
And I'm going to do an acrylic inlay on both sides of the board, like the two player sides of the board. And it's just going to say Check Oreos in kind of an Oreo adjacent font. And then I'm going to do probably... I think it was Emmett gave me the idea of also putting a drawer on each side for the pieces so that it's self-contained. And I think I might actually do that. And then I'm going to sell it as an art piece because it's going to be a really cool art piece. And, you know, maybe somebody will buy it. If nobody buys it, then I have a really cool checkerboard.
So what, in your opinion, is the best flavor Oreos?
I'm not going to lie. I'm a kind of an original guy. I like the original basic
double stuff
bitch
or
Oreos.
Original.
No, original. Not, I don't like the double stuff. That's just too much.
They make a thin one that has like
yes.
a mint. That is my favorite.
The mint ones. I've never had the mint ones.
I think
ones.
It's mint. They're green. Yeah, they're mint. They're good.
I love how they came out with one. They came out with one a couple of years ago, and I was laughing because to me, corporate branding departments are the freaking worst because they're so obsessed with the brand that they miss fun opportunities with doing stuff. Like Pepsi did the Peeps Pepsi, and
sure,
I was like,
yeah.
wow, they really missed the opportunity to call it Peepsy. Like, how do you not call that Peepsy? Like, it's right there in front of you. Well, it was the same with Oreos. They did s'mores. And I was like, how do you not call those s'moreos?
S'moreos, yeah.
Like, how do you not do it? But there's probably somebody in the branding department going,
yeah.
that's not our brand. We don't call our, we don't mock our name, you know? It's like.
Must protect the brand, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm Oreos. It's weird because at the Stop and Shop near my house, Oreos and Chips Ahoy are on sale in alternating weeks every single week. It's just whatever week you go there, one of them will be on sale. This week it happens to be Chips Ahoy that are on sale, which means next week it'll be Oreos that are on sale. Every week, one of them is on sale.
We never buy sweets. We went to the grocery store right before we recorded, and I was standing there, and there was a box of these store brand, you know, triple pack cookies. I don't even remember what all's in them. I just knew I was standing there for too long and I was hungry and I said, they're coming home. So I've got some kind of chocolate nut, something, store brand version of a Chips Ahoy in the house after we're done.
I started to feel like an adult. I started to feel like an adult right after my surgery because eating became such a pain in the ass that like it was like, if I'm going to eat something, it's going to have some value to it. And then it got to the point where the surgery wasn't affecting me anymore. So it was like, I was able to eat a little more normally. But, you know, the last couple, I would say since about December, I've made an active effort, you know, because I was dating and, you know, it's like you want to look your best when you're dating. You don't want to show up on a date and somebody goes, ugh, that's not, but
that's the noise my wife makes every time.
I realized how good I've been doing. I was so proud of myself. I realized how good I was doing the other day. I took one of my older belts out. And you could see the indentation, you know, how a leather belt, when you, it'll
buckle.
Pull on that hole a little bit and you'll know without even putting it on where you used to put it. I am now on the furthest in hole on that belt. I used to be six holes away from where I am now. And that belt,
congrats.
The last time I wore that belt was October.
Oh, wow.
So I'm kind of proud of myself for that. And I know, you know, the one good thing I have going for me is I'm 6 foot one. So I carry my weight. You know, if I put on a lot of weight, it takes a long time for it to show. But it made me really happy to put that on and be like, oh, wow, that belt. And I even showed Kathy, I'm like, look at this. She goes, yeah, the belt's too big for you. I was like, yeah, but look at this. This is where it was. And I point, she goes, wow. So it's a good feeling.
I have this business idea. I think some people react to negative encouragement, like the fear of reprimand is what encourages them.
Okay.
To work. You know, there's some people who work well on praise.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people who work well towards a goal. But there's some people who they work their best under the fear of being chastised.
Okay.
And so I thought you could sign up for this app where it's negative reinforcement. And so say you put in what your goal is, and every day you commit, you know, hey, I want this level of harshness in the messaging. And it's like, okay, it's, you know, $5 a month for this service. You go, okay, I want to lose 20 pounds. I want you to text me every day and call me fat, let's just say. And so every day you get a new creative text message that like, hey, you still eating Oreos, fat ass? And you can't opt out. There's no opting out. You can't block the number. You can't opt out until you show them evidence that you've lost the 20 pounds.
That's
so
genius.
They just keep charging you until you, and it's just this negative reinforcement to work towards a goal. It's not for everyone, but I think it's for someone.
I would absolutely use that app. There are a lot of, I have a lot of bad habits that I've just kind of gone, well, this is just my bad habit and I just deal with it. Like,
yeah,
damn, that would be amazing. I would totally try that app.
I need to get on OnlyFans and find one of those girls to tell me, it's not that you're old, it's that you're fat. And maybe that would motivate me to, you know. I thought that might work too.
Age is just a number, right? Yeah, so is your weight. That's amazing. I love the idea of negative reinforcement. Man, now I'm thinking like, if we go on Fiverr right now, I'm pretty sure for a couple of $100 we'd get this app done.
I'm sure for a couple cents we could get somebody. Yeah, right. We could get the app made for that. I just think like my wife is an incredible person and she has accomplished amazing things, amazing things. And she works best under fear of letting someone down. That's what motivates her is she can't let the team down. She can't let you down. Like that's what drives her. It drives her crazy, but it also makes her do things that shouldn't make sense. No one should be able to do these things, but she does them because she's not going to let you down.
Well, that's why I think the charity thing that you did and that Emmett did, I think that's why it works, because we are a community in general of people who are like, all right, granted, there are people who just didn't commit. I'm not talking about them, but the people who did, they're like, no, I put my name on this. I can't come back later and say I'm not doing it. Like it would be unheard of to do such a thing. Like I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Let's talk about these for a minute. So I don't know. All right. So say you do something like that and the first tree Emmett gets out the box is just, you know, art piece. Mm-hmm. Does that discourage others from entering? Or do you start with, you know, some, hey, look, we got this. It's good. It's fine. You can do this too. Participate. With mine, I was showing the toys. So here's the thing sent in and here is the tangible. These are the toys that I'm donating.
This is what you've done. This is what you've brought. You made this happen. Thank you.
Yeah. And so I don't know what the right way to get engagement, because that's what it's about. It's about engagement. I know we have the eyes. I know we have the ears, but how do you engage people to act?
It's very interesting you ask that question, because I have a dilemma in the real world, very adjacent to what you're asking. I do not want to participate in the Maker Camp Maker Swap.
Sure.
Because I don't know what I bring to the table that would be something that somebody at Maker Camp wouldn't be able to do.
You know, and the probably problem, better Benson, is all we think about are like the knives or like the marquee items.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just stuff that people make, you know,
I saw the stuff though. I saw it last year and I was like, I'm glad I didn't make something.
So I was struggling, you know, Keith had kind of suggested maybe just doing like a box of stamps, you know, made locally. Thank you for your purchase, sold, you know. And then a little card in there like, hey, here's my email address. Send me your logo. I'll make you a custom stamp as well.
Okay.
And so they get like 5 stamps or something. I don't think that's a bad deal. But I'll tell you what I really wanted to do. I probably won't do it, but I was thinking about making a leather bag. But reaching out to friends in the community and saying, hey, Jacob, Other Dog Designs, I want to deboss the Maker Camp logo on this bag. Will you make me a stamp? And then, hey, Griff from Griffin Makes, I'm making this bag. I want to put one of your make before or remove before making tags. It's like the aircraft. I want to put this on the bag. And then so make this item to give in the swap that's a conglomerate of my community and get, you know, 5, 6, 7 people to send something to me and I incorporate them. And then it's got more of a story behind it.
That's a really good idea.
I've got 1,000 bags, but I don't have that bag with that story.
Right.
I don't know. I think there might be something there. I need to get on it if I'm going to do it.
I think you've been talking to Christy too much, because now you're looking to make stuff with stories attached to it.
Yeah. She might be rubbing off on me. You're right on that one.
Just a hair. Why don't we, since we're about an hour in and I don't want to keep you from Kristen for too long, why don't we switch over and do some things of the week? Because I am genuinely curious to know what your thing of the week is.
Well, you're not going to be too surprised, because we've already talked a good bit about it. Emmett is doing the Orphans of the Storm charity fundraiser. We've talked about our trees ad nauseum, but there is a milestone that kicked off yesterday, and that is he has begun to sell tickets. Mm-hmm. So if you're not familiar with this project, go check out Emmett's page, Dead Rise Woodcraft. He has posts all over about it. You can go back a few episodes on Vinny's podcast here. Emmett was a guest on it where he talked about the project. And basically what it is he's fundraising for an animal shelter so that they can build a new facility that's outside of this floodplain. And the way he's doing this is he is raffling off various items, including the Maker Treescape collab. Emmett is known in the community for making many trees on the lathe. He makes these treescapes, small forest scenes, and this one is special because all the trees on the treescape were provided by makers from the community. Vincent sent in one. It's a replica of a tree from the Mario Brothers video game. I made a palm tree out of some brass shavings and epoxy. There's a ton of trees. You can look at them all on Emmett's page, but also there's more. That is only the grand prize. Emmett has a slew of other prizes that are being given away. So when you buy a ticket, tickets are $5 a piece. They go into the raffle for all of the prizes. I've donated an ashtray. The guest from last week, Ethan Carter, he has donated some leather goods. I don't remember if it was an X-Acto or what it was, but I know he donated some leather goods. They have headphones that have been donated, safety gear that's been donated from Magic, which is my favorite safety glass provider. And there's just a lot of great stuff out there. You need to check out Emmett's page. You should support him. All $5, 100% of it goes to the charity because you are actually going to Venmo Orphans of the Storm and then send Emmett a copy of your receipt. So there is no impropriety here. Emmett is not touching a single dollar of this. Go straight to them. You send him a copy of the receipt. Then he enters you into the drawing. $5 per ticket. He'll pull the tickets at the end of July. And you have an opportunity to win prizes from the pack of things that have been donated from various members of the community, and to culminate with the grand prize of his treescape collab made from trees. And some of these are art pieces. I mean, Chris Raley from Route 9 Designs made another tree. My buddy Austin, High Caliber Craftsman, and his father turned trees. There's a bunch of them on there. Dave Bauer, he blacksmithed the tree. Lindsay Creative, she took a piece of broccoli, made a relief mold, and cast it out of, I believe, pewter. To make a pewter broccoli tree. There's 30 plus in here. It's really something special. And in the end, you know, what's $5? Come on, man. Give up your $5. Buy a ticket, help support this good cause, and help support a member of our community. Do something truly special. That's my infomercial.
It's an absolutely fantastic charity. Like Dean said, Dean and Austin did an episode with Emmett around the time he started collecting trees. Yep. We had him on here a couple of days later. It's definitely something you need to look into, and you should definitely support it. Even if you're not going in there just to win something, just a donation to a good cause that's helping animals is definitely worth your time. If you go to Emmett's Instagram at Dead Rise Woodcrafts and you hit his link tree, he has all the details on how to get a raffle ticket in his link tree. It's at the top link for the Orphans of the Storm giveaway. So you're definitely going to want to hit that up.
It's a really nifty PDF, easy to understand directions.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love this idea. That was a very good thing of the week. Mine is much, much less relevant to our community, but it's been
amazing. Brings as much hype. I need more energy. When we record, I'm so mundane. I need to bring the kind of energy that comes with your thing of the week.
Yes, because nothing says energy like professional wrestling.
That's it.
If you guys follow me on Instagram, you probably saw a couple of nights ago. I think it was like Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday night last week or Wednesday night last week. I won the WWE Universal Championship from Roman Reigns.
Hell yeah, brother.
I have an Xbox Series X, and I have really, really been enjoying WWE 2K23 as of late. I had put it down a couple of weeks after I got it because it was just, I was stuck in the career mode, and I went back to it immediately, just kind of rocketed past where I was. Like, I just needed to get away from it for a while, went back to it. Now I am borderline obsessed with the game. Like, I sit here playing that game. Like, it's now my downtime is playing that game, and I'm very happy to do it.
Do you have a go-to character, or you made a character?
So I made a cat. So in, there's a mode called, what's it called? My Rise, which is basically you have two storylines you can follow. You create a character, and then you follow a full-on storyline with branching arcs and everything that you make decisions. Your story completely changes, and you go through a whole career as one person. I took the same character I made in that mode, and I made him as a character in the game with the same stats, and now I'm playing in Universe mode, which you play for 1 year as a wrestler on either Raw, SmackDown, or NXT, and you can make rivalries, you can set up tag teams, you can challenge for championships, you do a Royal Rumble match. It is so ridiculous how good the presentation on this game is. And in fact, One of the things that I've noticed, because I watch WWE every week on all three of their shows, I watched SmackDown on Friday after playing the game hardcore for a week. I was like, wow, it looks just like the game. You know, it's like it clicked in my head, like the arena felt familiar. You know, even the camera presentation, everything about it, the commentary, it feels like you're watching it on TV, and that makes it just that much more immersive. So it's an awesome game.
How much purple is your character wearing?
Just the shirt and the hat and the trim on his shoes. Okay, so he's wearing a lot of purple. But you know what was really cool? So just to give you an idea how much attention to detail that they do on this game, when I won the championship, when I got my first intro after I won the championship, the lighting in the arena was purple.
Oh.
It's like they really do, like, it's the attention to detail in the game is ridiculous. It's just, it's so much fun. If you're a wrestling fan, that's a game you need to get your hands on. And what's great is if you're a wrestling fan, there's another game coming out June 29th. AEW's Fight Forever is coming out. So if you're a wrestling fan, it's a great time to be a wrestling fan with a modern game console. So,
Well, I know you normally run into your patrons at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to kind of plug something, if you don't mind.
I know you're a patron
of our podcast. We really appreciate it. I need to get off my butt and add yours to mine so I can listen to your all your presentations. But one fun thing we've been doing and I've been enjoying is I've been making songs that we release on Patreon.
Oh, my God.
And they're just goofy, ridiculous songs. This is the 19th we're recording. I don't know if this is coming out on the 21st or not.
21st, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So on the 20th, our Patreon will release the third song in the series, which is called My Dog Eats Bread. And basically, it's to Chris Isaac's Wicked Game. And it's a story of my Labrador who eats bread out of grocery bags. And so I just Weird Al version of the song. It's the third in a series. The first one was I had a coworker who was late to work because a horse got out of a corral and was hit on the highway. I'm in Texas. And so they had to wait to get the horse off the road before they could reopen the road. And so I remixed Lainey Wilson's Heart Like a Truck into I Hit a Horse with My Truck. And then, and this is not high production value or anything. It's just something we give to our patrons. And the middle song of the three was another coworker. She witnessed a car rear end a bus. And so to Billy Joel's Vienna, I sung a song about buses stopping for tracks. And it's my favorite. A lot of people are liking the Lab song, but it's something, you know, I just do as an outlet. It's a lot of fun knocking these songs out. We're going to try to do one a month, and maybe by the end of the year, we'll have a full album.
I'll tell you what, as someone who's not a singer, you know, I have really found my groove doing karaoke at the bar.
Nice.
And it's one of those things, man, once you get into it, people don't care if you're good or not.
That's all it is. I'm not any good. I'm not going on American Idol or anything, but I enjoy it. And I think people get that out of it. Yeah.
I think that's what it is, right? So when I went up the first time, I was listening to other people and I'm like, okay, I'm definitely better than that. Like, and it's like, I feel like that's what encouraged me to just go up there and just do it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if everybody that went up there was a banger, because we go, one of our friends that goes with us, she's next level, like professional level, amazing talent, vocalist. And I feel like if everybody was at her level, I would never go up there. Like, no, I'm not hanging with this group of people. But there are some people that I've many times I've turned to Kathy and gone, I think she's ever even heard the song. You know, it's like, but I think what people respond to you enjoying it. And I think the idea of doing a parody is even more a response to people enjoying it.
And just quickly to mimic what you said about the wrestling and watching the show and the video game and going, oh, that's the same. I listened to those songs a bunch when I was writing the lyrics. Mm-hmm. So my music player thinks that they're like my favorite songs ever. And when they come on, it freaks me out for a split second. Cause I go, how did Amazon get this? How did Amazon get my copy of this song? And then I realize it's not me. It's actually the professional singing.
It's really funny. The algorithm. So I've been rehearsing because I'm doing the next time we go to the bar, I'm doing two duets with that woman who can sing her ass off.
Yeah.
And there are two duets coming, her and I. So I've been rehearsing in the car. I call it
can
rehearsing.
We ask the songs?
What's that?
Can we ask what songs?
Sure. Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's a tough one.
It's a very tough one. Yeah. I pretty much know every word of the song, but I'm just trying to keep the rhythm right because that's the hardest part when you're doing karaoke. Because believe it or not, you can't hear the music when you're doing karaoke. It's not as obvious as you think it is. I guess people wear headphones. We don't. But the other one is Evanescence, Bring Me to Life. Bring me back to life. Here's the problem with that song. And she told me, she warned me. She goes, I've been wanting to do this song for years. She goes, but nobody can do the male part. I was like, well, why not? She goes, because it's not on the screen. The version of the song that he has only has the female part.
Okay.
So if you go up to do this with her, you have to do it from memory. So she goes, I will do Paradise by the Dashboard Light with you, but you have to do this with me. And you have to know the song by heart. I'm like,
I'll bring a note card.
Nah, I'm just going to go and wing it. I've actually, you know, I'm not going to, I think for like, except for like two-ish words, I keep tripping up on the same two words. Yeah. I think I can actually do it. And with enough bourbon in me, with enough bullet in me, I'll go right up there and I'll sing my ass off. Even if I get all the words wrong, no one will know.
Well, I signed you up for the app. You're going to get a text every morning that wants you to sing the whole song. And if you mess any lyrics, it's going to tell you about it.
I was the weekend we made this decision. I was walking around the house. I was working on the house because Debbie and her cousin lived together. And I was walking around the house just singing the song. And she was just like, oh, God, how much longer are we going to have to hear this shit? So it was, we were supposed to go two weekends ago and we didn't go. So now it's like, oh, OK, at any moment this could happen. So I have to stay sharp.
Yeah, you can't say this yet, but I just look and go, it's been 18 years. You knew who I was.
You knew what you were getting into.
Yeah, it's been 18 years. You're going to listen to a song about a dog eating tortillas.
4 months ago, when we had our first kiss in the parking lot of the diner that we went to on our first date, little did you know I was going to be a karaoke ham.
Yeah.
You know who's not a ham, though?
Your patrons.
Damn right. The people that pay for this shit show that I put on every week. And those people include Matthew Serio from Artigiano Serio.
Real
Big
quick,
El Schultz.
Mandy,
yeah.
Matt, unbelievable guy, huh? Artigiano Serio. I saw he just sent a book to Weird Guy Jeff. Mm-hmm. What a great guy.
And I
told myself I was going to jump in on you on that because I wanted to shout him out. What a great member of the community.
He is the most supportive human being on the planet. No, awesome. No doubt about it. He called me, actually, because I was like, bro, for those of you that haven't subscribed financially to the show, that's fine. I'm not shaming anyone. He's at the terabyte level of podcast. I only have two people at that level, and he's one of them. And, of course, Al Schultz is the other because Al's just, you know, my godfather at this point. But Matthew Serio is on the terabyte tier of support. He was the first terabyte tier supporter I had, and that's a $20 a month support for this show. And it just means the world to me that he thinks enough of this show and what I do to support me at that level because it's huge. It helps a ton. I mean, Zencastr is not free. The software that I use for editing is not free. None of it's free, but, you know, he's right there kicking in on it, and I really appreciate it. Big Al Schultz of New York Woodworks, Tori Decker of Tori Did It, Ed Swanson of Ed's Clocks and More, Jake Drews of Make With Make, I cannot ever say his damn name, Make With Jake, Megan Chris of Onyx Designs Woodwork, Christian Neary of Warren Works, Ken Madden of Mad K Studios, David Wood of DW Wood Builds, Jeff Stein, aka A Weird Guy, Kim and Garrett from Kim and Garrett Make It, Rory Langefeld of RLL Woodworks and DIY, Robert J. Keller, Brian Arsenault, Seven Hills Maker, Lars Coleman from Colorado Multicraft, Dave Bauer of Dave Bauer Art, Nick Birchtold of Birchtold Design Build, Donald LeBlanc of Fun with Woodworking, Jeremy Spies, Grant Alexander of The Clamp Podcast, Brad Harrison of Brad's Customs, and Billy Poulton of Poulton Projects. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. It means the world to me. Times are tough, and this does make it a lot easier. So thank you so much. If you can't support the show financially, I completely understand. Share the show, write a review, whatever you can do to get the show into more ear holes and eye holes would be greatly appreciated because the more people that listen and watch, the more people want to listen and watch. It's kind of self-fulfilling that way. That's why I like supporting my people with patronage. And that's one of the reasons I support Making Our Way. I only support a few podcasts, but I always support at a level enough to get my name mentioned so they know that I really, really like them. But I remember talking to you before you guys had a Patreon, and I remember saying, like, you guys get it. I want to be one of your first patrons.
You were.
And I was like, oh, they got it. Boom. I'm in. Like, I wanted to support your show because I loved what you guys were doing from day one. I love what you guys have continued to do. And I like that you haven't changed the vibe of your show. It's the same show that you started with. It's the same show I loved at the beginning. And you guys should definitely go check out Making Our Way. It's an absolutely fantastic podcast with three of my favorite people. So
all inspired by you. I still can recall sitting in the other side, sanding something with my headphones in, listening to you and Ethan. That's what got me into the Maker podcast. So it means a lot, Vinny. Thank you.
It was absolutely amazing last week just having a chat with Ethan, like having Ethan on. And the people were sending me messages like, OMG, the warm fuzzies of hearing you two back together again. And it was, I almost went full on retro, but I just did the intro for Because We Make, but I wanted to do the theme song too. But I was like, I think that might confuse too many people. Like, they'll be like, what's that? You know, because I know I've picked up a couple of new people that never listened to that show. So I didn't want to do that. But it was just so much fun chatting with him and kind of reliving the old days. But Dean, it has been an absolute pleasure. It's always fun talking to you, man. I really have enjoyed it. I know I've kept you from the College World Series, but, you know,
that's okay.
It's only LSU, so I don't feel bad keeping you from it. as Dean mentioned, I'm an Alabama fan. He's an LSU fan. So we have that natural rivalry, but we still love each other very much. And since I love you so much, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, learn more about you, and see what you're up to?
Sure. Instagram's a great place. It's just my name, Dean_Duplantis. And I'd love a follow.
He will absolutely be one of the more interesting people you follow. And now I'm putting that pressure on him, so I hope he's okay with that. But in the show notes, you can find all of Dean's links. I'll have them all in there for you, so you can go follow along. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Thank you so much for listening, for watching, however you consume the show. I would like to make one little request, if you have a moment. If you could watch the show on YouTube, it would be a big help to me. YouTube is starting to let smaller channels monetize their content and get into the partner program a little earlier than they used to. But in order to get in there, you have to have a certain amount of watch hours. And I figure a hour and 20 minute podcast is a very good thing to get those watch hours up for me. So if you have a moment, I know you're probably downloading the audio version of this. That's how most people listen. But if you have a moment, maybe you throw on the show on YouTube and you just let it play as background noise. I won't tell if you're not actually in front of the screen, and neither will they. So, let's pad those numbers a little bit, shall we? Anyway, have a great week, everybody. I will be back again next week. I believe the following week is the 4th of July. I will be taking that week off because I'm not going to be anywhere near a computer from Friday until the day after the 4th of July. So we won't have a show that week, but there will be a show next week. I don't know who yet. I'll think of something. I think of these things on the fly. It might just be me, but either way, I will talk to you then. Have a great week, everybody.